everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. Today I am pleased to introduce to all of you Diego Blameyes, Gentoo developer. Diego is a one-man quality assurance testing machine. When not reporting or fixing bugs, he runs across with his tinderbox. Diego is a proficient blogger at Blameyes weblog, http://blog.flameyes, that's Flameyes, .eu. Then when he gets bored, he helps out with PAM and Ruby teams. Also, lately he's been getting Pulse Audio fixed up for all of us Gentoo users. Diego and I had a little bit of a problem at the beginning of the podcast because our connection kept dropping. I record the podcast with my Asterisk server, so in order to try to save him some money, I call VoIP straight to his, I think he's on VoIP too, and it kept dropping. It seemed like it was right after about 20 minutes. So we kept trying, and after the podcast was over, we found out that in Italy, that's where Diego lives in Italy, I guess there was a big storm coming through, and so that was the reason. I was a little bit concerned because I thought maybe it was a problem with my Asterisk server or my setup or my internet connection, but it looks like it was just Mother Nature. So, Diego, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Is Gentoo your first open source project?
I'd say the first one that has some kind of fame out there. The first project I've collaborated to was Ultima Online server emulator, which was a Nox wizard. It has been quite a few years since I last played Ultima Online, so it's not really something I speak about quite often. But it has been a nice start somehow. My lead at the time, the project admin, is now a KDE developer, so more or less it has been a graduation kind of project for both of us. Worth nothing, probably just into nothing more, I guess.
How long have you been a Gentoo user?
That's a very good question. It has been probably 5 or 6 years, I guess. I came across it from my local Linux user group. So it has been something somehow strange as a way to come up with Gentoo on my systems. It was after I was rebuilding half my Debian packages and just tried it one night, destroyed my Debian system during the installation, but nothing worrisome. And I stuck with it till now, mostly.
On your first install, how did you get it installed correctly the first time you tried?
Absolutely not. The first time, I overwritten everything in the Debian system with stage 3. And when trying to shut down the system, the two XFS software that were overwritten one with the other went crazy and destroyed the whole root file system. So I had to install from Debian mini system and tried it 2 or 3 times in a week. But it went fine, so nowadays I try to install it the right way, the first time, because it can be quite a long process otherwise.
Yeah, it seems to work out a lot better when you do it the way you're supposed to.
Yeah. especially when you remember what your current working directory is.
How did you come up with the nickname Flame Eyes?
This one is quite funny too. It's still related to Ultima Online, when I used to play a lot. I was a game master on a local shard and just needed to have something to be identified in the game. And between being too rational on decision and being a bit too hasty, the options were between Ice Eyes and Flame Eyes. The latter sounded cool, so I chose that one. And yeah, I like it, I keep it, and it's not extremely unprofessional even on workplaces, so it's good.
What has your journey been like with Linux, and how did it get its very beginning?
Well, I started on and off. At the time, I was trying Windows NT 4, and one day I found on a magazine a Win Linux distro. I have no idea what its destiny has been. It was a KDE1 based distribution, and started from the FAT file system, used UMS-DOS. At the time it was deemed cool, I guess. Didn't like it very much because it was tremendously slow, but when I tried Mandrake, now Mandriva, and Red Hat, then again Mandrake, then Red Hat, Debian, I stuck with Debian as sole operating system for about 3 years, and then I went with Gentoo all the way for my main system. At least I have 1, 2, 3, 4 operating systems in this room, so yeah. It's mostly a matter of having the control over the system, because every time I have to deal with a proprietary operating system, something goes wrong. So Linux was the right choice for that reason. And I think it's turning up quite well lately, too.
That seems to be a general theme of people, Gentoo users. Anyhow, they start out with some type of a distribution that's RPM-based, and something happens along the way with dependencies, or they break the system, and then they go to a Debian system. With me, too, I went to straight Debian. It was before they had Ubuntu, but I enjoyed Debian because it seemed to be pretty stable and worked, and then from there, I moved on to Gentoo also. So that seems to be a general theme of people. They start out with the RPM-based system. They go to a Debian or a Debian-based system, and then they try Gentoo.
Well, the installers on Mandrake and Red Hat, last I tried was probably Red Hat 6.2, something like that. They used to have a very good install. They still have a very good install. So it was an easy way to start with Linux. And from there, it's somewhat downward in terms of user interface, because the Debian installer, I have no idea about the recent versions, but at the time was quite more rough than the Red Hat one, but it gave better control over what the system went to install. And from there, the step to Gentoo is just noticing that something isn't just quite right on a system. It's a good generic system, Debian, but when you need something tuned up just for your use, it doesn't get through enough. So Gentoo was the obvious choice.
What motivated you to become a Gentoo developer?
Sincerely, I have still no idea. I guess it's part masochism, probably, because it tends to be quite heavy-duty work. But I basically started with just keeping an overlay of ABs for applications that weren't packaged before, and themes, other lots of KDE themes, window decorations, and stuff like that. And I started submitting them to the Bugzilla. And a few developers asked me to take the quizzes, and at one point I have no idea yet why I wanted to, but I wanted to try Gentoo FreeBSD.
Mm-hmm.
I had my main system, which just broke down mostly. It had problems with overheating and over problems, and I was waiting on a new one. So I put Gentoo FreeBSD on it, tinkered with the various builds, and then they asked me to become a Gentoo developer once again, and I just agreed. It started like something to do just in spare time for fun. Sometimes it's difficult, but it's still quite fun.
What aspects of Gentoo do you feel the developers and the maintainers have gotten right?
The control, use flags, CFlex handling, compilers handling. You've got your system, and it's just your system. There aren't two Gentoo systems that are identical in any way. I have two vServers running Gentoo, but they are different, one with the other. It's different set of packages, different set of features enabled, and even if I use the single chroot to maintain them, they are not anything alike one with the other once the packages are installed. So, yeah, having a customized system, Gentoo is the only thing I would ever use.
What is it about Gentoo you would like to see improved?
Well, the main thing that needs to be improved in Gentoo, well, there are quite a few, because otherwise I wouldn't be working on quality assurance. But mainly it's communication between teams. We've got quite a few instances that shown that we need better communication between various teams and from teams to users as well. Just as an example, we had a change to HAL recently that broke the system mode of Pulse Audio. It was needed to get policy kit, console kit working properly, but it has caused quite a bit of grief to users, at least those using system mode. Just having a way to tell the various projects involved, see, it's going to be changed in HAL from version X, and you've got to change Pulse Audio either in this way or another way, just find something. It would have saved quite a bit of time to both users, developers, and everybody else at the end. We need to talk between teams, between sub-projects, because even if Gentoo doesn't have a single goal, it still can do everything at the same time. It can be good for desktop, it can be good for server, embedded, everything. Just need to coordinate better between problems. Because if embedded needs something to be built without getText or without PAM. It would be nice to know that sometimes we forget we have different point of views and different requirements. And coordinating between sub-projects so that one change doesn't go to break something on another sub-project is probably what Gentoo really needs. It's probably because of this that from time to time you hear the usual rumors that Gentoo is dying, Gentoo has problems, and stuff like that. It will be that the main problem that Gentoo has to solve.
I hear that a lot with the other Gentoo developers that I interview is about the communication. I'm not sure if it would help if they had a regular project on communication that would coordinate all the communication between the different developers, or maybe one person on Bugzilla that all he did was make bugs for to put different bugs together. I'm not exactly sure, but it's a common theme I hear from the different developers about the communication.
Yeah, it's probably due to the fact that everybody needs to find time for Gentoo. We are all volunteers, so it's difficult sometimes to find the time to actually go around and ask people, or sometimes you have no idea who that person that maintains that package is, or maybe that person is not around and there is nobody to take up from there. It's pretty hard to find a single way to communicate between the around 300, I guess, developers we have. It's not easy, and me too. I have to find a better way to communicate from time to time. I have gave up on IRC some time ago, but it is difficult to go around without that because nobody uses a single medium. There are developers that are only reached by email. Others are only reached by Jabber. Others IRC. It's too fragmented, the communication medium. If we had one single way to communicate, it would be much better. Mailing lists used to be the one medium that noise, flames, off-topic posts. It's not easy to manage.
Yeah, that's the type of work that a person that wouldn't have to be technically inclined. It could be almost be a staff member of Gentoo that would the developer could go to and say, "Look, I need to contact this person, and this person. You know, could you help me out?" And have like a almost like a clearinghouse to for somebody to do the groundwork to do the, help with the communication.
Yeah, it will probably be nothing technical that has to be involved in the process because at the end it would just be somebody who can see what's going on, who can look at, what the project is planning on doing something to the package. We have to warn the people working on the package bar that there is going to be a change. It's just one very highly time-consuming job.
What are some of the projects that you are currently contributing to?
Currently, it's a. I'm not sure myself as what I can say I'm currently contributing to because I'm still a Xeon developer, but I have had little time to work on it in the past 2 years. I've had a bit of trouble myself, so it slipped off. I'm currently working as a paid day job on Fang. It's a RTSP multimedia streaming project together with Luca, Lu Zero. And nothing else major. Mostly I'm cleaning up some project from time to time. I send some patches around to Pulse Audio, for instance, lately. Nothing I'm working full-time on.
As a Gen 2 developer, what are some of your accomplishments?
I think the one that makes me most proud is Gen 2 FreeBSD. When I joined, it was a proof-of-concept project. It has shown that we could rebuild the basic of FreeBSD system using Portage, which was from based itself from the FreeBSD ports. And from there, we've gone to rebuilding almost everything from scratch with the 6 series and now with the 7 series that Xavier and Alexis are working on. We've come to a point where it's almost production stable. My own blog used to run on Gen 2 FreeBSD for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it had even less problems when it was running on Gen 2 FreeBSD locally than it had when I went on a Vue server. That's probably because the power between the two machines was tremendously different. The Vue server was reduced, but it worked, and it made me very proud when I could just run my own blog and my own website over it. And not only as a Gen 2 FreeBSD project proper, but the well project has shown that we could do much more with Portage than we have been doing before. So it served as a basis to rewrite the base layout on OpenRC that is hopefully going stable one day or another of the next few months. I hope at least. And Gen 2 Alt that is now being shown running on even Windows Server 2008 at Linux Tech in Germany. And all in all, we've done quite a good job, I think, with sending also patches upstream for FreeBSD support that ports weren't going to send. So that's probably my biggest accomplishment in Gen 2. And the other is probably having a working PAM setup because it was pretty scary when I joined.
Yeah, I've been using OpenRC and the new base layout too for a while now. I guess it's been an unstable for probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 months anyhow, and I haven't had any trouble at all. It was a little bit different, just like anything else when you have to change to where the configuration files are, but I haven't had any trouble at all once I got used to where the different configuration files were.
Yeah, the nice thing about that is that Roy went out of his way to rewrite everything because originally it was just base layout 2, and it was just a rewrite of the base layout with compatibility with FreeBSD, merging the patches that we have had on the FreeBSD-specific base layout package that was the same as base layout 0.5, I think, something like that. And then it went out of its way to break it up in base layout with Gen 2 specific code and OpenRC that was totally independent from everything else. And the nice thing about that is that you have the same configuration for both Gen 2 Linux, Gen 2 FreeBSD, Gen 2 NetBSD. It can all run on the same exit code with the same exit configuration files, the same path, everything else. And it makes possible to share it between the systems quite easily. Unfortunately, it's not yet frozen in stone, so it can still change, and it is changing from week to week, which is why it's still not stable. It's going to take probably a few more months before we can call it stable. But the very code that is running the init scripts in the latest versions is so streamlined that you can have a single line init script on Gentoo FreeBSD to start some of the basic servers like an SCD.
Walk me through the process of setting up a tinderbox and explain what a tinderbox is.
Well, it can be meant in very different ways. We have at least three different projects called tinderbox in Gentoo. The one that is on official infra hardware, which is tinderbox.dev.gentoo.org, is basically rebuilding the whole system and creating binary packages, which are used usually just to find out the reverse dependencies or from time to time when we screw up to recover a broken system. I had to use it just last month to fix my own tinderbox after I broke Python entirely. Then there is Patrick's tinderbox and mine that are mostly focused on finding bugs with e-builds and finding bit-rotting e-builds. Mine hasn't really been set up at all at the start. It was just a standard chroot where I started merging up all the packages in the tree. Originally, I just used ls to find the directories in the tree and then run emerge on all of them. Mm-hmm. With time, with help from Zach, I've extended it and I've made it stop wasting time trying to rebuild packages that are not available on the architecture, which is x86. And that's probably what it does at the end still. It just takes a list of packages that hasn't been merged in the last 10 weeks or hasn't been merged at all or are not merged under the system and tries to build and merge them. Mm-hmm. From there, it just tries to find other problems like quality assurance problem, like pre-stripped files, files built without abiding to user settings, files installed in the wrong place.
What open source software can you not live without at home and at work?
Well, I work at home, so it's probably just a single question for me.
Right.
And I guess it's Emacs. I can't live without Emacs, for sure. I used to be an Emacs user when I was running Mandrake years ago. Then I moved for a while to Vi and Kate. But Emacs is my editor, and not just an editor, but also a file browser from time to time. It really has everything, including the kitchen sink, I guess. Mm-hmm. From there, well, everything that interfaces with Emacs at the end, because FCM's various, FCM's integrates with Emacs, and that is, I can run basically any system as long as Emacs is on it. And strangely enough, Compit. It's usually considered just eye candy. I know lots of developers, but don't care at all about it. They don't care at all about 3D performances because they don't run anything but the standard Windows Manager. But with Compit, I end up being able to use 12 desktops at a time, which is what I usually do. And it makes my life easier, more than I would have said a few years ago when it started.
I was, it used to be on the Compaz mailing list, and there was branching. There were branching Compass. I guess one of the original developers was branching Compass off to another a branch or something. Have you heard any more about what's going on with Compass?
Sincerely, I don't really follow the development of it. I know it has been quite difficult as an history because it branched up, merged back again, branched up again, and I have still no idea how that's working on. As long as it is working on my system, I try to not follow the development very closely. I try to limit the amount of projects I follow in detail because it can be quite time-consuming, and time is a very scarce resource.
Yes. I just got comfortable with ALSA, and I understand that ALSA basically just gives us Linux users basic sound. And the reason that they're using Pulse Audio is to be able to do much more advanced things with our sound. So could you please explain Pulse Audio to me and how to get it set up properly?
Well, ALSA is a pretty old project, and it started with Carnet 2.4, and it was meant as a replacement for the old open sound system. It's providing a much more complex API from the one that OS has provided. It allows for plugins to be executed when audio is outputted from applications, and it allowing quite a more complex setup on what concerns configuration files and defaults. It can resimple output, it can mix different streams, it can have software volume control. It wasn't meant to work with modern hardware, though, because at the time when ALSA was originally designed, sound cards were mostly still providing hardware control for volume, hardware mixing, at least a few channels. We were providing most of the resampling. It was pretty nice for what the hardware was at the time. Sound Blaster Live, EMU 10,000, for instance, that kind of hardware also was quite fine and quite ready for desktop usage. Nowadays, we don't have that kind of hardware. The HDA hardware that is in almost every modern computer doesn't have even half those features. It works with usually fixed sample rate of 48,000 Hz. It works with a single auto channel, and it's the software that has to take care of mixing. Oftentimes, it doesn't even have any kind of volume control in hardware, and needs software to handle the volume control for various line in and line out handling. This really called for something that took the place of ALSA, but Pulse Audio doesn't really take the place of ALSA as it is. It integrates into it. It replaces part of it, replaces part of the userland side of it, because it handles mixing of different channels together in place of a DMix plugin from ALSA. It takes care of volume control with fine grind volume control, and it also takes care of handling switching between hardware. At the time ALSA was created, we didn't have much USB audio equipment. But nowadays, there are tons of audio microphone in USB cameras or USB headphones. And switching between an USB headphone to an USB sound card or the other way around cannot be done with just ALSA. It really needs something else to take care of the switching. Otherwise, you have to stop, change the device, and play again. Pulse Audio tries to take all the tasks that are needed for an audio subsystem for the desktop and handle them transparently to the user. The idea of Pulse Audio is that you don't have to do anything to set it up properly. It should take care of setting up itself. Unfortunately, Leonard Poitring is the, if I pronounce this right, it's German, I don't really know, and he works with Fedora. It doesn't go out of his way to work with Gentoo or any other Linux distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have problems integrating his code into other distributions, Gentoo included.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you cannot blame him for, because at the end, that's his job. And the other vendors, Gentoo included, needs to have someone that takes a look at what is needed for the desktop system and integrates it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this a few years ago already, and I have created the first Pulse Audio setup for Gentoo at the time, and now I have been out of the loop for a while, so really it's quite likely that Pulse Audio, as it is, doesn't integrate well at all on the Gentoo Linux desktop. I'm sorry for this, but it went through the cracks of the limited resource that time is. What I'm trying to do now is making sure that the next release, 0.9.16, is going to work fine on Gentoo. And it's going to be quite a task, because Leonard is relying more and more over real-time support, because most of the audio problems that are to be solved nowadays need to have a strict real-time environment, because you have to take action in the right moment, otherwise the user will hear skips, tracks, and other problems. And it's not an easy task with the normal Linux kernel, and it needs some patching that we don't provide as it is right now. And it's going to take even more dependencies to be installed, like the real-time kit that Leonard released a few days ago. And it might sound like it's over complex, but one has to remember that ALSA comes with a Lisp interpreter, like Emacs. It's a bit of an overkill by itself. And DMX is far from being the perfect piece of software that was supposed to be when it was released. ALSA is just feeling the age of time, because it wasn't designed to work with modern hardware, just that.
What programming language are you using, or what programming language do you use to work with the Pulse Audio and the UserLand?
Well, my language of choice for smaller tasks is Ruby. I like the language, I like sort of like the interpreter. It has quite a few limitations, but they are workable usually. I don't like the current Rails community and all the recent projects, because they tend to have quite some quality assurance problems, like releases not working or no release at all. For everything else, Pulse Audio and Fang, Xen, just above everything, is C, standard good old C.
What gives you the most enjoyment within the Gentoo community?
Working with various developers. While we have quite a few communication problems, as I said before, we are quite a tight group of people in smaller chunks. Not all of the 300 and or so developers do see eye to eye with each other on various issues, but you can rely on at least a handful of colleagues to be around if you have the need to find something about any topic. Almost every possible area of expertise, there is an expert that works in Gentoo. And it's quite an environment to work on, because you really find yourself not having an idea on how to proceed on something. You just need to find the right person to ask.
Diego, I want to thank you very much for all the time and effort that you put into Gentoo to keep it plugging along.
Thank you, but it's really not a huge deal after all. It's mostly fun, most of the time. Sometimes it can be a bit of a trial, but it's mostly fun, yeah.
And I want to thank you for the interview.
Thank you again for the opportunity.
Okay. I'll talk to you later, Diego.
Okay. See ya.
Okay. Bye.